Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You know the hockey stick graph, that famous climate chart showing a steep increase in global temperatures after the Industrial Revolution? To many, it illustrated the science and the urgency. Well, it also ignited a backlash against the scientists behind it. Michael Mann was at Penn State when it published. Two right-wing bloggers say Mann politicized the data. They write that he molested and tortured it, comparing Mann to convicted child sex abuser Jerry Sandusky. Well, this month, Mann won a defamation suit against them and was awarded more than $1 million in damages. Thing is, personal attacks are not uncommon for Mann and for other scientists, like vaccine scientist Peter Hotez. Critics showed up at his house filming him, arguing that people have been vaccine injured.
And what do you have to say to people who think they're vaccine injured? Anything for them?
I don't come to my house.
I mean, do you have anything to say?
As for Michael Mann, well, he was accosted and followed in front of the court during the defamation trial.
Look, sir, just stop pushing me. If you don't stop pushing me,
stop the police.
I will call the police if you don't stop pushing me.
Professor Michael Mann joins us now. He now directs the Penn Center for Science, Sustainability, and the Media at the University of Pennsylvania. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be with you.
So your victory in court comes as attacks against scientists, climate scientists, vaccine, public health scientists. It all continues. What message does this verdict send, do you think?
Yeah, that's right. I think it comes at a particularly important, almost poignant time. It took us 12 years to finally get our day in court. And in that 12 years, as you allude to, the attacks on scientists have escalated, not just climate scientists, but of course, public health scientists like Anthony Fauci or my good friend Peter Hotez, mm-hmm. who have been vilified simply because of their message. It's the attack the messenger strategy by, you know, those who are driven by an ideological agenda, whether it be climate denial or vaccine denial. That's the world we live in today. And so I do think that this, you know, this decision came at an important time, and I think it does send an important message.
Yeah. And the message is what? I mean, is it one that will deter people who are sending these messages, or are they going to continue as they have?
Yeah, you know, it's not going to stop the anonymous trolls on social media. But what I hope it will do is lead conservative media outlets that have promoted these scurrilous attacks. I think they'll now think twice because there's a penalty. There's a penalty for engaging in dishonest attacks against scientists. That's the message it sends. Mm-hmm. And I think that there will be wider reverberations because many of my colleagues I know are afraid to speak out about the implications of their science out of fear that they'll be targeted. So maybe this creates some space where scientists feel a little more comfortable in sort of leaving the laboratory and communicating their science and its implications to the public.
And what are some of the efforts to physically intimidate? Surely threats of violence, death threats, some have hired private security. What do people do to try to maintain some semblance of their life?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, I've received white powder in the mail once. The FBI had to come in to investigate to make sure that I and my colleagues weren't subject to a dangerous substance. Peter Hotez has had, you know, vaccine deniers show up at his front door and physically intimidate him. Some folks have had to hire private security. Many others have simply shied away from public events, from giving public lectures, from any exposure. And so, again, it's this chilling of the scientific discourse and this intimidation that causes scientists to withdraw that is so pernicious because climate change, the climate crisis, pandemics, these are the greatest crises that we face as a civilization.
Well, let's talk about climate science and, of course, the famous hockey stick graph. For those who don't know about it, you know, my kids are in college. They were born way after it came out. What is the quick version of what you found and how scientifically sound it is?
Yeah, well, if you think about the name, a hockey stick, what does a hockey stick look like? That's what the curve looks like. And so this reconstruction of temperature that we had performed using natural archives like tree rings and corals and ice cores, we attempted to reconstruct the patterns of climate variability back in time, and it resulted in this curve that looks like an upturned hockey stick. And the blade is that sort of that rapid warming of the industrial era that exceeds anything that we had seen in our work over at least the past 1,000 years. Now, many teams have not only validated and verified our work, they've extended it farther back. And so the latest scientific publications in this area suggest that the warming that we're experiencing today is unprecedented in tens of thousands of years, maybe more than 100,000 years. Mm.
Since that paper came out, and that was the late 90s, yeah, 98, 99, when you kind of step back and think about climate scientists kind of for the rest of us, where has the certainty improved and where is there still uncertainty?
Yeah, it's a great question because there is always scientific uncertainty. And the critics, you know, the climate deniers and those who downplay the threat of climate change love to talk about uncertainty as if it's reason for inaction, when it's just the opposite. So first, let's talk about what's certain. The fact that the warming that we're seeing today is unprecedented as far back as we can go, the rate of warming during the industrial era, the fact that it's caused by fossil fuel burning and the increase in carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere, we're as certain about those propositions as we are basically about gravity. That we are starting to see dire consequences of that warming in the form of unprecedented heat waves and wildfires and floods and superstorms, coastal inundation. Again, the science there is quite certain. Now, where there's uncertainty is just how fast, for example, will the sea level increase. That depends on the behavior of the ice sheets, which we know are starting to melt, but the physics of those ice sheets is complicated, and there's still a debate within the glaciological community as to the precise rate at which we can expect these ice sheets to disintegrate and contribute to sea level rise. But here's where uncertainty is not our friend. Over the past decade or so, as we have refined our understanding, we are finding that these processes can play out faster than we thought before, that the ice sheets can and are disintegrating faster than our models predicted. So if anything, uncertainty is not our friend. It's reason for even greater action. And I'll point to one more example because it ties into some of our own research. We've shown that there's a subtle impact of the pattern of warming, especially the fact that the Arctic is warming more than the rest of the Northern Hemisphere. That's changing the behavior of the jet stream. And it's changing it in a way where we get these very high amplitude stuck weather patterns in the summer that give us these extreme weather events, extreme floods, drought, wildfire. We've seen that in North America. We've seen that in Europe. We've seen that in the rest of the world. And what we're learning is that the models have probably underpredicted the impact of climate change on those extreme weather events because of the subtle physics that governs how the pattern of warming influences the behavior of the jet stream and these weather extremes.
Yeah, well, and as you say, right, the uncertainty of where are we under-predicting what is coming.
Exactly.
Finally, I want to ask you about the sense of fatalism about climate change. Certainly you've seen the poll numbers and others where many young people are so pessimistic. How do you speak to this younger generation about where we go from here, what we do from here?
Yeah, you know, there is a lot of climate anxiety, as we call it, among young folks, and it's understandable because they're going to inherit the most severe consequences of the climate crisis, of the warming that we're causing and the impacts that it's going to have. You know, as a university professor, I see it in my students. Mm. There is this sense of despair and even doom. And it's actually why I wrote my last book, Our Fragile Moment, because it's about the lessons that we can learn from the past to see how it can inform our understanding of climate change today. But there's more than 4 billion years, billion with a B, years of Earth history for us to learn from. And when we look to the past and we try to understand what it tells us, it turns out that it reinforces two very important aspects of the problem. It reinforces the urgency of acting, because when we look at past climate changes, we see how sensitive the climate is to increases in carbon dioxide concentrations. Mm-hmm. And it tells us that if we continue on the course that we're on, if we continue with business as usual fossil fuel burning, we will see truly catastrophic consequences. That's the urgency. But it also informs the agency that if we take that concerted action, we can keep warming below catastrophic levels and avoid the worst consequences of the climate crisis. And that's what I try to communicate to people. Yes, it's urgent. You know, we're not doing enough, but it is still possible. If we get the action that we need, if we get the policies that we need, we can prevent a catastrophic future. And that's what's so important for young people in particular to understand. It's not too late. Hmm.
Michael Mann is a climate scientist. He directs the Penn Center for Science, Sustainability, and the Media at the University of Pennsylvania. And his recent book is Our Fragile Moment: How Lessons from Earth's Past Can Help Us Survive the Climate Crisis. Professor Mann, thanks for the time.
Thank you. It was great talking with you.